Hello and welcome to the Audrey McGuckin Leadership Podcast. As you guys know, this podcast is dedicated to providing helpful insights from some of the industry's best and most respected leaders in the human capital space. I'm your host, Audrey McGuckin, CEO of Audrey McGuckin Talent Solutions, and today we are joined by Helen Friedman, CEO of Merit Analytics. Welcome, Helen.
Thanks so much, Audrey. A pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So, you know, often the work that we do with clients is about bridging the gap from strategy to execution. And the starting point for that is always diagnostics. And whatever level that may be, diagnostics, analytics, and insights. And what I find is that there's a real struggle to really nail this piece. And when you and I first started talking, I was really, really intrigued about your thoughtful approach, how you think about analytics, how you position it, and how you partner with clients. So I'm thrilled that you're on this episode with us, Helen, and I'd like to jump right in. One thing that would be fantastic, Helen, if you could maybe just tell us who you are, what Merit Analytics does, and just a little bit about yourself.
Oh, be happy to, Audrey. And I have to say, in our past conversations, I too have gotten very excited about the work that you're doing and how you're approaching your partnerships, both with clients, with your colleagues, with consultants. You've been a great advocate, and I want to thank you for that. I'll give you a little bit of background. I actually started as a theoretical mathematician who ended up as an actuary in HR consulting, which is really about applied math. So don't hold that against me. But I love the work, and especially special projects. But I realized that I spent a lot of my time trying to understand and interpret one number on a balance sheet. And so I took a step back, I took a pause, and went back to business school in order to get a broader business understanding, quite frankly. And I realized that at the time, there wasn't a lot that existed around addressing other workforce challenges beyond some of the things that you would remember even from back then, back in the day, around, you know, employee engagement, assessment, things of that nature. But you know, there were a lot of other workforce issues that just weren't being addressed in the same way. And so I've been passionate about the space, quite frankly, ever since, for over 20 years now. And most recently, before starting Merit Analytics, I was actually the talent analytics consulting and software global leader for Willis Towers Watson. That's a lot of words, but basically, what I found and why I started Merit was because a lot of the larger firms really have to focus on the traditional domain, and a lot of their energy is spent there. And it's hard to be nimble or sufficiently dedicated in an area like this that is growing so quickly when you're in that environment. So now I'm really able to focus entirely on what I love, which is supporting organizations in their efforts to build workforce analytics and planning.
Yeah, no. And Helen, a couple of things. I love your story and how you came to be CEO of Merit. Often what we find in organizations is the work we do in succession, leaders, top leaders and top talent can be found in some of the most unusual places. And you and I talked about that, and that's really a cornerstone of my business and my philosophy is don't always look in the usual places. And so just I love your story. I think the other thing, people that know me well just know that I'm so passionate about opportunities for people to grow and expand in things that they love to do.
Yeah, and you know what? I too, although I can't say I did a statistical analysis of this, I too have seen in talking to many leaders over the years that those who have taken sort of a non-traditional career path or career opportunity at various points, it's really allowed them to have a unique perspective, and it's been very valuable. valuable, I think, both for their own personal growth, but also professionally. It's differentiated them. And so I wholeheartedly agree that following your own path, following your own passion is a great gift in life.
Yes, no, for sure. I know my own personal journey was an unusual path to CEO, but one that has served me well and keeps me humble.
Yeah, I'm still getting used to that CEO terminology. We started our firm last year, so maybe it'll get more comfortable for me over time.
Yeah, no, for sure. Helen, you know, one of the things that I find when I'm working with clients is this notion of HR functions having to be more and more analytical. And that's on the one hand. And on the other hand, what I find is that HR teams struggle with that. And I wondered, could you share what's been your experience and how does that show up for you when you're interacting?
Yeah, and I think, Audrey, in fairness, I think there are multiple tiers to being effective in the analytics arena. I think the first thing organizations think about, and rightly so, is that they need some core analytical expertise, right? Not surprisingly, they need to typically hire or somehow find that talent. But I'd also argue for broad-based adoption of analytics in HR, there's a broader community, the HR business partner community, that's a key consideration and conduit as well. Right? So I think that there are multiple tiers, and there are others as well, but just for purposes of our podcast, not to belabor our poor audience too long, but I would like to talk about just those two maybe for today. And in terms of the analytics COE, I think there are a number of hurdles that they have to work through. I think that one of the bigger challenges is they jump into analytics, quite frankly. And I think that having a strategic plan, going back to the role that you've played in organizations and helping think through an HR strategic plan or a people strategy, likewise, you need an analytics strategic plan, right? So that you can set the stage for what you're trying to accomplish near-term versus longer-term. And it has to have certain dimensions in it, I'll be honest, Audrey, to be effective. And I think that that includes things like the methods you're going to follow and being deliberate around that, the data you're going to deploy and being deliberate about that, the people and the investment that requires and the skill set that requires, the supporting tools. It doesn't mean they have to be the most expensive, complex tools, but you need to have a plan around what tools you're going to engage because it influences what you can do, right? And then I would argue that also education and change management. It's funny, I argue that half my time is probably not spent on analytics, it's spent on education and change management, because for this to work, I need to have that in place. Maybe to touch just a moment on the other aspect, the aspect of the HR business partner, because I think that that's an important one as well. I think analytics education for that group in particular has major dividends for organizations. I think they're increasingly expecting HR business partners to be analytical, and yet more often than not, I still hear when I ask the question, do you even have being analytical in the HR business partner job description? The answer is no. So we shouldn't be surprised that this is an area of challenge or maybe disconnect, if you will. I find that there is an opportunity, not necessarily to teach everything about analytics in its depth to that community. I think that there are things you can do to help them be more analytical without them having to be a mathematician, right? So helping them think through how do they develop the right questions? How do they think about the hypothesis and whether, you know, how to prove or disprove that hypothesis? To go in with an understanding of then how would you look at and interpret potential output? And then how do you tell a story with that information, right? So really helping them work through those practical aspects, right? Back to your point about being somewhat pragmatic, I think is important here. I'd also say one other thing. In organizations are unique, so it's not like one size fits all. I do agree that there's some underpinnings in how you approach it that are consistent, but we really have to listen to where the organization is and where the issues reside, right?
No, and I love that perspective. And I, you said at the beginning, Helen, the you know, a couple of the reasons that you started your own firm was to be nimble and sufficiently dedicated. And I think that that plays internally as well. You know, how can you be sufficiently dedicated when you're inside an organization and not be seduced too quickly with coming up with an answer, but really having the patience to ask the right questions.
And to live in the problem, right? So one of the great things about HR, and one of the reasons I love HR, is HR folks tend to be real problem solvers, right? They're focused on how do we fix that challenge. And I love that about HR, but in the world of analytics, we can't jump to a conclusion, right? We need to look at the data, draw our conclusions based on evidence. And that's the distinction. I think though, Audrey, you spurred another thought in my mind, which is going back to your point about looking in non-traditional places. The reality today is many more people are trying to do analytics in the domain of HR than there are experts with that exact skill set today. So I think that organizations also, it's a perfect opportunity to live what you say around exploring non-traditional backgrounds that could be useful. Now, you might need to bolster them in the near term around either HR understanding or something else, but I think that there are ways to do that and make it a win-win for that person and their career path, as well as a win for the organization in terms of what they can deliver in terms of analytics and HR.
Yeah, and I think that really speaks to the trend that we're seeing in the workplace around network of teams, meaning how we solve problems is not by domain expertise necessarily, but it's about really smart, really motivated individuals coming together and wrapping themselves around a problem. And so I'm a huge proponent of that, not only because it's a great way to solve business problems, but secondarily, experience is the new compensation for the generations in the workplace right now, meaning they really are highly motivated by new experiences. And so the more we can create those new experiences.
Yeah, and you know what, Audrey, I know one thing that we've discussed offline, and I think your point really kind of brings up in my mind, is this notion of, yes, but the key is to then have them focus on the right questions, right? Because if we put those teams and we sub-optimize them in terms of what we're challenging them to address, you know, we might not get the result or the value from that time spent, right, and that effort. So I do think that landing on what are the right questions for analytics is actually a critical starting point for many organizations.
How do you do that, Helen?
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. It used to be the challenge was even finding data to analyze, right? And today, there's certainly a wealth of available data, probably more than we'd like to handle or know about in some cases. You know, there's still this question of data quality in some respects, and so I'm not going to give short shrift to that, but I think data availability today is both a blessing and a curse in reality. You can measure so many things that identifying what's most important to measure is actually becoming more of a challenge, and I see a lot of organizations sort of following what I'll call a bottoms-up model. And what I mean by that is looking at almost each group, picks, you know, two from column A, two from column B, you know, and it becomes more, it feels somewhat equitable, but maybe not as impactful as it could be. And I think especially earlier on in your analytics journey, I actually find that a top-down approach can be more effective. And what do I mean by that? If you really think about how is the organization going to be successful, or if you're a for-profit, how do we make money, right? And how does talent either contribute to that, or how does it get in the way of that desired outcome, right? What pain points do we need to resolve? And I actually, it's funny, I often joke, and hopefully it's funny, I should say, I often joke that leaders, and I oversimplify this, really have two motivations. One is ambition, and the second is fear, right? So I either have to find something think that's going to help them succeed, or they believe will help them succeed, or I have to find a risk or something that could get in the way of that success. And if you really asked organizations how many of the things that they're measuring and analyzing today would really hit one or both of those points, you'd likely find that it's not at the point we'd like it to be, right? It's not, a lot of what we're producing might not have the impact that we really want it to. And rightly so, because we haven't really done that top-down strategic view that you're so well known
for. No, that's great. It's great to hear you articulate it that way, Helen. And one of the things I thought would be helpful for our listeners is, if you had a couple of rules of thumb, or if you had some best advice for organizations that are struggling with analytics, what would that look like?
You know, it's funny. So as a consultant, I would have to start with the, of course, it depends. However, since I know you'll still press me on this point, I will say there are a couple of things that actually do come to mind in almost all cases. And I'll be honest. So one of those, no matter where you are in your journey, I think that it's really helpful to have a roadmap. And a roadmap includes what you really want to accomplish with the enough details around how you're going to deliver on that. And I think about it as the questions you want to answer, the methods you're going to employ, the tools you'll use, who will do the work, how you'll engage leaders, right? All of those things, not only do they help you gain buy-in by being able to share it in a very concise and determined, you know, way, but I also think it's a way to hold you and your team accountable for doing the thing. Because it's what happens is leaders will consistently come to you with new, different, and intriguing questions, especially the more that you deliver, the more that tends to happen, and you can go off course pretty quickly. So having that as your foundation, I think, is really important. I will say there's another kind of corollary to that in my mind, especially if you're earlier in the journey, and I would say it's identifying one specific analytic priority that you want to tackle, and it's a way to kind of focus on what you can practically get done and not just sort of talk about the theory of analytics, right? Because leaders tend to respond and respect that pragmatism. And especially as you're earlier on wanting to show them what you're going to do, giving them a tangible example is really helpful. And I would point out one other thing in that regard. Be prepared when you do that. If you tell leaders what they want to hear, they will question what value you add, right? On the flip side, if you tell them something they don't want to hear, they will not necessarily want to believe what you're saying, right? So either way, you need to be prepared to work them through that change, to change their mindset, right? It's that I said at the early on in this conversation, it's as much about change management as it is about the fundamentals of analytics.
Great. So three pieces of advice from Helen. One is have a roadmap laid out and try not to be seduced by the
I'm pretty sure I didn't use that term, Audrey, but okay.
Yeah, have a roadmap, have one specific priority, and really think through this changing mindsets.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that, the one last piece of advice maybe I would give, Audrey, along those same lines is, a lot of organizations try to do this without dedicating the resources. They think people can do this on top of their job. And I will tell you that's almost assuredly a way where if I go back and visit them, 6 months, a year later, they'll tell me at best little to nothing happened, or at worst, they've actually in some way disengaged their leaders because they weren't really prepared to be able to deliver on their commitment.
No, and I think there are lots of parallels, Helen, that as we wrap up this conversation, I see a number of parallels with the work that I do in people strategy and succession, which is really about it's about the roadmap. But I think this most important point is creating space in the system, whether that's dedicating resources at an HR level, whether it's having leaders and managers be on board, whether it's systems and processes. So dedicating resources and creating space, which means there's always things that you're going to have to stop doing because there's no shortage of work.
Yep, and the same thing with measures, right? You look at, there's no shortage of metrics out there these days, right? But what metrics really matter is a bigger list and really ties to that approach that you just...
Yeah, and I think if that can be connected to the moments of truth for organizations, then that becomes a really powerful game plan. Helen, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Audrey McGuckin Leadership Podcast. We look forward to the next episode. Until next time, I'm Audrey McGuckin, and thank you for listening.